AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, your home for original reporting.
I'm Monica Ricks in New York. Thousands are dead and hundreds more people are injured following a massive 7.2 magnitude earthquake in Turkey and Syria. Ismail Al-Abdullah is with a relief group called the White Helmets. They're digging through rubble to search for survivors.
It's a very difficult task for us. We need help. We need the international community to do something.
CBS's Tina Kraus reports from our foreign desk in London.
The powerful earthquake struck near the border of Turkey and Syria as people slept. And daylight revealed the scale of the disaster. This man says 12 families were trapped here and no one managed to get out. Rescuers worked quickly and carefully in the bitter cold. Some still buried in the rubble posted videos on social media begging for help.
Turkey's president has declared a 7-day mourning period for those victims. Here at home, President Biden is weighing in on the tragedy. He says he's deeply saddened by the loss of life and devastation. The U.S. has already sent 2 search and rescue teams to the region to help. Meantime, U.S. military and law enforcement continue to collect debris from that Chinese surveillance balloon that was shot down over the weekend. CBS's Kimmy McCormick.
Recovery crews were able to retrieve some debris yesterday, but sea conditions prevented underwater crews from searching the area. They're at work today, and they include explosive ordnance teams. A U.S. commander says they're concerned about hazardous debris and possibly even explosives, and they're asking the public if debris washes up on shore to avoid contact and notify law enforcement.
Authorities in Ohio plan to release toxic chemicals from 5 cars of a derailed train in East Palestine to avoid a huge explosion. That controlled release starts in about 2 hours. Investigators in Maryland stopped 2 suspects from shooting up several power substations that would have left thousands in the cold near Baltimore. FBI special agent in charge Thomas Sobosinski says a woman was recorded telling an undercover agent about the plan.
Marylanders can rest assured that a threat to disrupt their daily lives by attacking the local power grid has been stopped.
Those suspects were neo-Nazi extremists. 2 children who were kidnapped by their mother in Missouri have now been found in Florida. CBS's Wendy Gillette.
The 2 abducted children were found last week in a supermarket in High Springs, Florida, near Gainesville, with their mother, who did not have custody, 36-year-old Christy Gilley. Police located Gilley after running a routine vehicle check that showed she was a fugitive. Gilley remains in jail. The 2 children, who are now 11 and 12 years old, were abducted last March from Clay County, Missouri, a suburb of Kansas City.
Police say they'll be reunited with their family soon. This is CBS News.
The Shaw 101 FM, Brookfield's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matnair. Here's what you need to know. Federal aid for food benefits ends this month. Food pantries already seeing an increase in demand because of the high price of food and gas. Officials worry the loss of the additional money will put an added strain on food pantries. The loss to federal aid will disproportionately affect some seniors living on a fixed income who've been getting the maximum allotment of $281. That help for food will soon drop to the minimum of $23 a month. $164 million. That's what was spent on Wisconsin's 2022 governor's race by candidates and outside groups. The Wisconsin Democracy Campaign says that broke the previous record of $93 million spent in 2018. Executive Director Matt Rothschild called the total shocking and tells WPR part of the reason the governor's race raked in so much money is that campaigns in Wisconsin have become nationalized. I'm Jane Matnair. This is Civic Media News.
Hey everybody, how we doing? I'm Charlie Behrens, inviting you to join me Saturdays and or Sundays at noon. It's a horse apiece, whatever you decide. We're doing the Cripes Cast, where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest, and it's more fun than a 6-pack of Jolly Good. Okay, the pride of Random Lake, that Jolly Good is. Anyway, it's on your Civic Media station and the Civic Media app. And do me a favor, yeah, tell your folks I says hi. Okay, real good.
Do you love getting rewards when you shop? Then shop Knucklehead CBD and Vapes with the Knuckleheads Club. Every $10 spent gets you closer to 25% off. No matter what you buy, make sure you buy Knuckleheads. Stop in Saturday and Sunday and get 15% off wellness and wellness plus, including Delta 8, THCP, CBD, and more, while getting points towards your next purchase.
Visit Knuckleheads Milwaukee at 2949 North Oakland Avenue or online at knuckleheads.shop.
Knuckleheads CBD and Vapes, your one-stop smoke shop.
Max Inc. Radio, we are local music with Pete from the Skin Tones.
Here, you have been warned. Not only Madison, the rest of Wisconsin and the U.S., Skin Tones, we're coming at you. We're going to be committing rock atrocities. We're fit. We're in shape. We are tight. We are muscular. We are attractive for our ages. And we are sexy as hell.
Listen to Max Inc. Radio Saturday night, 6 p.m. to midnight on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK, 540 AM, Waukesha's only news talk station. Native Roots Radio is an independent product and has a joint sales agreement with Civic Media. Enjoy!
Supper Club off Moore Lake and Highway 65.
Portions of Native Roots Radio may be pre-recorded.
It's a good day to be indigenous.
Get up, stand up! They are going to become more brutal.
Couldn't cook, any cut again.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade. Hey, Kadagi, to all my friends and relatives in four directions. You are listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot, and we discuss local and national Native news and events. And as you know, Wendy, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
This portion of the show is brought to you by Native American Community Clinic in Minneapolis, honoring health and tradition.
Hey, a lot going on Turtle Island, Wendy. Welcome. We're going to be talking our sacred animal section here, and then we're going to have Dr. Stately on. And then we do the news that you don't hear anywhere else, and we have Ogama standing by. And Ogama, welcome. And let's talk about things that other people don't talk about or want to talk about.
Sure. Bonjour, Anin relatives. This is Ogama Ganuakwe. I am a citizen of the Red Lake Nation in northern Minnesota, and I have some news and information for you here on Native Roots Radio. The first thing that I want to mention is I want to remind everybody, next Tuesday is Red Dress Day. That's the day that we honor the memory and the still grieving relatives of our missing and murdered Indigenous women, Two-Spirit, and other relatives. So make sure that you are taking the time to find your local event. I know there's events in the Twin Cities in Minnesota, in Duluth and Bemidji, Minnesota. And I'm sure there's other events throughout the nation here on Turtle Island. This is an event that is recognized every year for, gosh, I don't know how many years, Robert, since Red Dress Day started for MMIW, maybe about five or 7 years.
Yeah, I know, Wendy, we went to the first one and that had been about six.
Yeah, long time.
Yeah, it's hard to count with COVID.
Right, right, exactly. There were a few years off there, but really looking forward to being down the Twin Cities next Tuesday myself to be there for the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition March that they have every year. And then concurrently, or I should say on the next day, the Rise and Repair Rally, which is happening at the Minnesota State Capitol in St. Paul on Wednesday, February 15th. The Rise and Repair Rally is a rally for Indigenous rights and climate justice. The event starts at about 11 a.m. at the Capitol and goes until about 4 p.m. There's going to be a circle dance and a rally at the Capitol Rotunda. And then from 2 to 4 p.m., there's constituent meetings with legislators and a postcard drop, which is really great. So if you are going to come, just make sure you go to riseandrepair.org, drop in an RSVP, and you can get some information on getting there, on where to park and where to go if you need accessible options. So again, Rise and Repair Rally, January 15th at the Minnesota State Capitol. However, Robert, were you down at the federal courthouse today in Minneapolis?
Yes, I was. And there were speakers. I posted them on my own personal Facebook. Indian Collective was there shooting the whole thing. And it was about an hour long and speeches. And got to see Mike Gozy opened it up with a prayer. So it was good. And those have been going on all over the nation.
And why were you there?
For Leonard Peltier.
Okay.
Exactly.
Awesome.
Yeah, February 6, 2023 marks 48 years since Leonard Peltier was imprisoned for aiding and abetting the murder of a federal police officer, not actually murdered, but aiding and abetting. And the circumstances that surrounded his trial were also a little bit fishy. They were never really proven without a shadow of a doubt in a court of law that had even happened, that he had aided and abetted for that murder. And many people have been referring to Leonard as a political prisoner for many years, including international organizations. And today in Minneapolis, at the U.S. Federal Courthouse in Minneapolis, was the Rise Up rally for Leonard Peltier. But there were also rallies throughout the nation at federal courthouses where people showed up and demanded clemency or the release of Leonard Peltier. Some of those cities included Rapid City, South Dakota, Fargo, North Dakota, Tampa, Florida, Santa Fe, New Mexico, San Francisco and San Jose, and Sacramento, California, Columbia, Tulsa, and Washington, D.C., of course. So those are some really exciting events that happened. There was also worldwide events that happened in Germany, Italy, France, and Switzerland over in Geneva. So really powerful events, and I'm glad you were able to be there, Robert. I'll have to go check out some of that footage a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. And there was a letter Leonard was written, or Leonard wrote and was read during the action today at the courthouse. So if you let me know, because I have it in front of me.
Oh, I was going to say, I have it in front of me as well. So I guess it's up to you if you'd like to read it or I could read it as well.
Seeing that Leonard's a guy, I'll do it as Leonard. No, I'm just kidding. I'll do it. and I'll even put a little AIM music in the background here just to create the whole vibe.
Correct. Ambiance, yes, yeah. Ogama, yes.
Greetings, my friends, supporters, loved ones. I know I've probably said this or things like this many times. Every time I say it, it is as heartfelt as the first time. From the bottom of my soul, thank you for your support. Living in here, year after year, day after day, week after week, plays on your concept of time and your process of thought beyond what you can imagine. Every day I have to say a prayer in the morning about keeping my spirit up and the spirits of our people. The struggles of the American Indian Movement, which are the struggles of all of us, have never ended for me. They go on week after week, month after month, year after year. When I speak, sometimes I think I may sound a bit too sensitive, but my love for my people and the love for supporters have shown me over the years is what keeps me alive. I don't read our letters. I don't read your letters with my intellect. I read them with my heart. My imprisonment is just another example of the treatment and policies of our people have faced since the arrival of the first Europeans. I'm just an ordinary man, and I come from alive and live and let live society like all our people. And yet we have had to live in a state of survival ever since Columbus landed. There's nothing about my case, nothing about the Constitution, which is a treaty between the American people and the government, that warrants my continued imprisonment. They have historically imprisoned or killed our people, taken our land and resources. Anytime the law was in our favor, they ignored the law or changed the law to benefit their agenda. After they've gotten what they wanted, a generation later, some politician would apologize. They have never negotiated sincerely with us unless we've had something they wanted and could not take, or we have an embarrassment before the world, or we have some sort of opposition. The opposition has always been the dominant reason for them making treaties with us. I could go on and on the mistreatment of our people and on about my case, but the United States said it. The United States has kept me locked up because I'm an American Indian. The only thing that really makes me different from other American Indians who have been mistreated, had land taken, or been imprisoned by our government is that it is all a matter or court record in my case. The violation of my constitutional rights has been proven in court. The fabrication of every piece of evidence used to convict me has been proven in court. The United Nations itself's compromise of 193 nations has called for my release. Noting that I am a political prisoner. In my case, as a political prisoner, there does not have to be a prisoner exchange. The exchange they need to make is from their policy of injustice to a policy of justice. It does not matter what your color and ethnicity are, black, red, white, yellow, brown. If they can do it to me, they can do it to you. The Constitution of the United States is hanging by a thread. Again, I want to say from the bottom of my heart, mostly sincere, do your best to educate your children. Teach them to defend themselves physically, mentally, and spiritually, and make them aware of our history. You know, I just have a little bit more to read, Wendy. This is kind of hard to read from a person that's been in prison for 48 years.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, I could imagine.
We're going to hit the break here, or we're a little behind on the break. But
do you want to finish it up when we come back?
I just got a quick line here. It says, teach them to plant food forests or any plant that will provide them in the future. Again, my heart to yours. Plant a tree for me in the spirit of Crazy Horse, Leonard Peltier. Mm. We'll be right back after this short break.
Stay with us.
I heard sex trafficking happens a lot in Indian country. What is that?
Here are some of the real reasons why sex trafficking happens in Indian country. Unequal gender roles that were forced on us by colonization. Communities don't have enough resources. Silence around domestic and sexual violence. Lack of attention and justice for missing and murdered indigenous people. There's a lot of behavior that keeps our communities out of balance. These are just a few true reasons why native communities are targeted by traffickers. When these acts of violence happen in our communities, it opens us all up for exploitation.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Hey, Ogama, I've been hearing a lot about this term, climate justice. What is that?
Climate justice is recognizing that the negative impacts of climate change don't affect all people equally. It also means transitioning from a fossil fuel-based economy to a more sustainable future. MN350 is one of the groups that's pushing for this transition to protect our futures. You can even get involved, too.
That's great, especially since I'm concerned about pipeline projects like Line 3. How can I help MN350?
Just find them on Facebook or visit mn350.org.
Metro State University invites you to explore how to grow your knowledge and advance in your career at their graduate program's preview day, Saturday, February 11th. Learn about more than 25 master's degrees, graduate certificates, and doctoral degree programs. Meet our extraordinary faculty and discover resources available to help you take the next step in your career. Sign up today at metrostate.edu/previewday. Change the world your way. Metro State University.
J&S Bean Factory is a native-owned, community-supported, cozy, artsy coffee shop which offers roasted on-site beans, live music, and baked goods. Relax in the beautiful outside patio. City Pages writes, voted top 10 coffee shops. Tucked into a quiet corner of St. Paul's Highland Park neighborhood, this coffee shop roasts beans on-site from the best coffee-growing countries in the world. Located at 1518 Randolph Avenue, St. Paul. The good stuff.
Hi, I'm Jane Fonda, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is brought to you by Howling for Wolves, protecting wolves for future generations.
Hey, we got Wendy on today, and we got some updates from Wendy in our sacred animal portion of the show. Wendy, you've been an animal advocate for many years, and you've also been a co-star of the show for over 6 years, so I just want to welcome you, and let us have what you have.
Yeah. Hey, everybody. My name is Hanajihihani. That means cares for them. I was given that name by my dega, Curtis. Curtis goes by Mashke Hanajinga, which means walks on white clouds. I'm a humane policy volunteer leader for the Humane Society of the United States, and I work on animal issues at the local and state level. It's always my pleasure to do that. But I'm doing something really exciting tomorrow, Robert. I will be at the Minnesota State Capitol for Wolf Day. Yes, Howling for Wolves, organization fighting for justice for wolves, is hosting an event called Wolf Day at the Capitol. Yeah, the Minnesota State Capitol. It starts at 10 a.m. If you're not signed up and you want to come down, just show up. They are taking walk-ins. We will be in the middle of the state capitol at the rotunda, beneath the rotunda in the tunnel. I think it's room B15 at 10 a.m. You could show up. And what we're going to be doing there is asking our legislators to please make concessions for our Minnesota state wolves, because here's the thing. They're protected right now, so we don't have to worry about a lot of hunters going out there and killing them all. But if the wolves are taken off the Endangered Species Act, guess what? Minnesota is required, I'm going to say that word again, required to have a wolf hunt. Now, how crazy is that? Yes, to have a required wolf hunt. And let me tell you something. When they require it, a lot of hunters come out to take advantage of that and blow the wolves to smithereens.
Ask our Wisconsin relatives.
Yes, yes. That's what exactly what happened. So what we're going to do is we're going to go down to the Minnesota State Capitol, and I have an appointment with my Senator Erin Murphy, and I have an appointment with my House representative, who is Dave Pinto, and I'm going to talk to them about why it's important to save wolves in Minnesota. And I have a sheet here, and it has facts and myths. And you'd be really surprised about some of these facts and myths. So, let's just talk about this fact. Fact: unlike deer and other species hunted in Minnesota, wolves live in social packs and depend on each other for survival. The social structure of the pack determines their reproduction. All members of the pack are essential to raise the 1 litter per year, the average pack size in Minnesota of 3.6 wolves. So only the alpha male and the alpha female in a wolf pack can mate and have puppies, or they called kits, once per year. But if one of those animals, the male or the female, the alphas, are killed, then the other wolves in the pack will be able to reproduce, hence causing more wolves to be born. Yeah. So killing a wolf endangers other wolves by disrupting their pack. So we have to keep that in mind. The average pack size in Minnesota is 3.6 wolves. So it's usually the mother, father, and their children who make up a wolf pack. So a lot of hunters really are up in arms about this, because they're like, if you kill the wolves, then we don't have moose and deer to kill.
Right.
Okay. So wolves are a myth. Here's a myth. Yes. Wolves are responsible for the decline in the moose and deer populations. And here's the fact. Wolves and moose have coexisted for thousands of years. Moose are in decline in places where there are no wolves, New Hampshire. Moose are on the rise where there are wolves, Isle Royale.
Isle Royale. Studies and experts point to the climate change, parasites, and disease as causes for the decline in moose. Deer numbers were at the highest when wolves were at their highest numbers in the early 2000s. As a predator, the wolf kills the weakest, unhealthiest member of the deer population. Preliminary studies show that wolves disperse deer that spread brain worm to moose. Thus, when wolves are in the landscape, they help slow the spread of brain worm to moose by moving deer away from the moose. So there are a lot of good things that our Minnesota wolves do. And the Star Tribune had an article in it. It was actually like a big article. It was dated January 19th, 2023, in the Star Tribune, and it was by Greg Stanley, and the title of it is "When Humans Kill a Single Wolf, it can decimate an entire wolf pack." So you could go ahead and take a look at that article in the Star Tribune by that article, and it's really important. But another wolf fact and myth. Myth: wolf hunting and trapping decreases wolf livestock conflict. So ranchers are very upset about the wolf being around, and they truly believe that the wolf is killing their cattle. Now, here's the facts. Wolf hunting and trapping causes unpredictable effects of wolf livestock conflicts, including increase in conflicts. The killing of wolves, either in a hunt or of livestock conflict, causes unstable packs and leads to more wolf deaths and more packs of younger wolves. Whew, that was a sentence. A scientific study by the Washington State University published in December 2014 found that killing wolves resulted in an increase in predation on livestock by wolves the following year. Non-lethal methods such as guard animals and carcass removal can effectively reduce wolf livestock conflicts. Yes, so if the calf dies, the farmer should take the animal's body out of there so it doesn't attract the wolves.
Exactly.
Right. But, you know, you could, the farmers and Howling for Wolves and also the Humane Society of the United States have programs for ranchers that they will give them free items to help deter the wolf. So alarms to scare devices, alarms, they'll go and show you how to use them. They'll help you set them up. Fencing and flattery. So flattery is where they have like moving flags around that blow around in the wind that will scare the wolves away. And we need human presence, right? Also the guard dogs that we talked about. So we really want to have non-lethal methods to prevent conflicts between livestock and wolves. But this is really another thing where the ranchers really have big lobbying power in Washington, D.C., and in Minnesota and other places where cattle were, range on the roaming range. So we really, and they put all these false, facts right out there, right? When they're really myths. So we're really around, and Howling for Wolves is there to educate people and to really, get away from those myths and really talk about the facts to save our Minnesota state wolves. So I hope that I talk clearer and better when I go see my senator and House representative tomorrow at the state capitol, and I'm excited to be there. So if you want to come down, just show up at the state capitol tomorrow, Minnesota State Capitol, at the the basement of the Rotunda, B15.
Hey, is there any, Jason asks, is there any number to call or email or website? Or is that call?
You could go on Howling for Wolves, their event page, and you could find out more information there.
Right on. Hey, Pina Gigi, Wendy, you haven't lost it at all. Great job. Up next, Dr. Stately, you're listening to Native Earths Radio Presents I'm Awake.
Stay with us.
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk from Big Bend to Menominee Falls. Always streaming at WAUKradio.com. WAUK 540 AM, Franklin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at WAUKradio.com.
For Civic Media, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. President Biden visits Wisconsin Wednesday. He and his cabinet will fan the nation after tomorrow night's State of the Union speech, which you can hear right here at 8. The visit will be in the Madison area. The White House says Biden will talk about how his economic plan is creating jobs and delivering results. Republicans say inflation has outpaced wages for more than 20 consecutive months under the administration. Expect to hear more about Wisconsin's wolf hunting plan this week. The Department of Natural Resources is holding a public hearing tomorrow to get feedback. The DNR's updated wolf plan removes a specific number for the state's wolf population. It would make other changes for hunting and trapping. After the public hearing, the plan goes to a vote by the DNR board. In sports, the Bucks are at Portland tonight. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
Know him as the nose tackle for the green and gold,
1993 to 1999, and again 2001 to 2003.
125 games, 292 tackles, 7 sacks, and a Super Bowl ring. But there's more to life than stats, and there's more to life than football.
You're about to find out.
Under the Helmet with the Grave Digger, featuring Packers legend Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram.
Monday mornings at 8 on the Shaw and on the Civic Media app.
Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian.
I'm really trying hard not to go insane from the mind screw that is this situation. Yes. With I was going to say the GAB, but now it's the WEC, which is audited by the LAB, and then it's now screwed up by the GOP, and we're all SOL. Good for us. Congratulations.
Look at all those acronyms. Yeah.
We're the winners.
Tune in for Dueling Tangents every weekday at 2.
I'm looking at the phone lines. I'm seeing some familiar faces. What's in mind of Gene of Eau Claire?
Well, welcome back, Matt. I really miss you. We've been missing getting woke every morning, but now we'll get woke in the afternoon.
What's in mind of Andrew of Detroit?
Professor, it's so nice you're back. We missed you during your vacation, and I'm very happy to be in your class for the semester.
Thanks a lot for calling in. I appreciate all my callers.
Tune in to Matt Flynn Direct, Monday through Friday, 3 to 4 p.m.
Hey, son, how are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it.
When your kid can't find the language, find the lyrics. Start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ed Council and Pivotal Ventures.
Your show, check out the new Maggie's Lounge, a perfect spot to visit with friends. That's Cruder's Supper Club off Moore Lake and Highway 65.
This is Leonard Peltier. I am in Coleman 1, U.S. Penitentiary, and I'm listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is brought to you by MN350, a grassroots organization fighting for climate justice. And I want to correct myself, Robert.
No.
Yes, I was wrong. So I said that if the wolves were taken off the Endangered Species Act, that Minnesota would require a wolf hunt. That is wrong. The DNA, the DNR, oh my God, the DNR may have hunting. May have hunting. It is not required. And Howling for Wolves defeated the mandatory bill last year. So way to go, Howling for Wolves. And Jason, you wanted to know who you could call to discourage a wolf hunt and protect the wolves. Get in touch with your state senator in your area and your House representative and just give them a call and ask them to do so.
Right,
that would be very helpful.
Right on, Wendy. And just a quick reminder, our lieutenant governor is in the Wolf Clan, so we always like to bring that up. And we have Dr. Stately here. It seems like months since we've seen him, huh, Wendy?
It's been months since I've seen him because I haven't been on the show on Monday and I haven't been on the show for a while. So, as you know, as you could say, I'm very rusty.
Welcome, Dr.
Good evening. Thank you. It's good to see you, Wendy.
Yeah, it's good to see you too.
Nice.
And good to hear Killer down there at your feet. He's growling on something.
He's actually growling over there at his brother. Stop. With the dog. Thank you.
Yes.
We haven't even howled yet. He's getting ahead of us.
I know. Watch out. Like if we howl, he'll run over here.
Yeah, we'll wait until the last segment to do that. Dr. Stately, how's it going? Wendy and I have relatives, and I'm looking on Facebook that COVID is still a thing, boy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure is. Well, it's interesting. You know, I was listening to that radio station that we don't ever talk about, and they were talking about how like they're going to end the a lot of the programming that helps to like they closed down some of their testing sites, they closed
right.
That'll happen this month because essentially the emergency declaration is coming to an end.
Right.
And a lot of thought process there. I know there's quite a few people, especially I think that people kind of further out state, they might like not have the resources necessarily to test or to get their tests. Like they live far from some local hospitals or pharmacies or those kinds of things. Like that can be challenging. The emergency declaration also paid for, you know, you to get those free COVID tests mailed to your house that either came from the state or either from the feds. And the winding down of that period, is going to mean that people will test less, right? Test less frequently. And I know that there's a whole group of people who weren't testing anyway. They would make the assumption that if they were sick, I don't know how they made the decision if they had COVID or not. If they weren't testing, they might have, did that like that.
Which way is the wind blowing?
Yeah, exactly. Like, oh, it's just allergies, I think, today. So, yeah. But that's one of the challenges I think that we're going to be seeing over the next several weeks, if not months, is that just less testing. We won't have a lot of a line of sight into how many people are actually getting sick and how many cases there are. It'll just significantly dwindle, which is a concern, I suppose.
So. What does a tribe do? And I know we're a sovereign nation, for instance, and do they follow the federal government? Do they make their own decisions? Is the funding going away for our tribes? I think that's a question for me as I'm a legislator for our nation, and this is coming up.
Yeah, well, I think that the funding mechanism that paid for a lot of the emergency, that when the president declared a national emergency, it opens up a lot of resources nationally at the federal level to sort of leverage and to sort of kind of get resources to like cities and counties and tribes and such and states that with the winding down of that that mechanism as well, those resources will be drying up, right, to states and to tribes. Tribes have, because they're sovereign nations and many of them have their own public health departments or divisions or entities, they can make some of those decisions for themselves about where to shift resources towards. But I think that, you know, by and large, across the United States, tribes are one of those communities groups of people that are, historically disinvested in across the United States, you know, and so even if they do have their own public health systems, they're probably not robustly funded.
Right. So I'm wondering, you know, do the nations, and I'll get after the away from this after you answer this, do these sovereign nations across Turtle Island, do they respond in a different way than the federal government when it comes to I'd hate to say, okay, it's over, and then some of my tribal members die of COVID. You know what I mean? I want that hanging over my head in a sense of making some kind of law along with the federal government if it's too soon.
Well, unless Congress were to enact something that extended that declaration, or unless, Biden declared it, President Biden declared it, there would be limited resources to sort of like, you know, all that money comes from a specific fund within the federal government that is designed specifically for federal emergencies and disasters, right? So he has limited ability to sort of like to do the those things as an executive, and lots of discussion at the federal level and also ironically at the state level as well about, you know, executive overreach, you know, the legislature and executive in office who are elected officials, make executive decisions of this nature. So those things change it. But tribes have probably other resources as well. They could probably get some funding from like direct funding from entities, federal entities like FEMA, CDC, HRSA, those kinds of places. But those are usually block grants and those kinds of things as well. And I think one of the things I would say is like, you know, that's the nature of sovereignty is that you do get to sort of like develop your own plan for like how you're going to address a public health crisis within your, Mr. Colin Cash, shout out to you too. That tribes have that authority under their jurisdiction as sovereign nations to sort of develop their own strategies and their own plans for like how they're going to address public health emergencies within their boundaries of their nation. And so they don't lose that sovereignty, whether they have resources to do it or not, they still get to develop the plan.
Yeah. Wendy, do you?
Well, I was just saying, Robert, what have I been doing every day since I got back from New York? And while I was in New York before I left, I tested for COVID. Yeah. Robert thinks I'm crazy, but I test myself like every day only because I was with two people for a lot of time and one of them ended up having COVID. And I've had a cold, a little bit of a sore throat. So I've been testing every day. I come up negative, but I'm paranoid about it. And I know those tests are very expensive. If I had to go and pay them, if I didn't have insurance, I wouldn't probably test. And I'd be walking around with possible COVID, spreading it to other people.
Yep. That is the danger we're in. So I think some of the challenges as well, as I heard somewhere on the radio, I forget where, not on NPR, but other news stories talking about, the vaccine manufacturers and also the testing manufacturers are going to increase the price of the tests. the cost of the tests. Part of that is probably related to, like, you know the healthcare by and large, really, it's just like, you know, it is a challenge. Like the insurance companies, especially the really big ones, do control a lot of like what's covered and what's not covered. And because they have so much tremendous clout and political clout and economic clout, they can do things like, well, we're not going to pay you the full cost of that test. Because we're buying them in bulk, or we're providing them in bulk to our enrollees, we're going to pay you 75% of what that test is worth, right? And so the people who manufactured the test and the people who are sort of manufacturing and distributing the vaccines and the treatments and those kinds of things, they want, you know, they don't want to lose their profits either. But, you know, I think it's always a challenge because, you know, I think part of our national conversation around some of this is like, you know, they use federal dollars. Like there was a tremendous amount of money that the feds put into developing vaccines and developing mm-hmm. the strategies to be able to test for these, to create these technologies. And so, you know, there's debates on both sides of that conversation about, you know, whether they should be allowed to be able to set the price or create the margins for those things. And well, we live in a capitalistic society, so they get to do yeah. those things.
Hey, Dr. Stately, we're going to take off here for a second, but I really want to touch base about the big earthquake in Turkey and Syria, because I know you lived in California for many years, and there's 3,000 people that are known deceased, and our prayers go out to them.
So it's so sad.
It is sad. We'll yeah. be right back with Dr. Stately, CEO of the Native American Community Clinic. Wendy?
Mm-hmm. Stay with us.
We'll be right back.
Minnesota has the only original wolf population in the continental United States, and 80% of Minnesotans believe the wolf should be protected. Howling for Wolves is asking Minnesotans to respect our true wildlife manager, the wolf. Their survival is critical to our ecosystems, our communities, and even our economy. As highly intelligent animals with strong social bonds, Minnesota wolves deserve to be protected and admired. Learn more at howlingforwolves.org. Let's live and let howl.
Metro State University invites you to explore how to grow your knowledge and advance in your career at their graduate program's Preview Day, Saturday, February 11th. Learn about more than 25 master's degrees, graduate certificates, and doctoral degree programs. Meet our extraordinary faculty and discover resources available to help you take the next step in your career. Sign up today at metrostate.edu/previewday. Change the world your way. Metro State University.
Progressive change doesn't just happen. It takes dedication and a lot of hard work. 25 years ago, the Data Bank pioneered a new generation of software tools for progressive organizations here in Minnesota. Since then, thousands of organizations have used the Data Bank to create progressive change. Today, the Data Bank continues to help progressive organizations like AM950. To have the Data Bank help your organization build capacity and create more change, text CHANGE to 612-540-0500 or go to thedatabank.com. The Data Bank, a quarter century of dedication and hard work for progressive organizations.
Hey, Ogama, I've been hearing a lot about this term, climate justice. What is that?
Climate justice is recognizing that the negative impacts of climate change don't affect all people equally. It also means transitioning from a fossil fuel-based economy to a more sustainable future. MN350 is one of the groups that's pushing for this transition to protect our futures. You can even get involved, too.
That's great, especially since I'm concerned about pipeline projects like Line 3. How can I help MN350?
Just find them on Facebook or visit mn350.org.
This portion of the show is supported by Howling for Wolves. Please join Howling for Wolves on Wolf Day, Tuesday, February 7th, 2023 at the Minnesota State Capitol. You can sign up on Howling for Wolves event page. Howling for Wolves, protecting wolves for future generations.
Howl. Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
And this portion of the show is brought to you by Howling for Wolves, protecting wolves for future generations.
It just went.
Oh,
little rusty.
Very rusty.
We're sending you back to broadcast school.
Yes, please send me away.
Oh, send you away. Good one. Yes. How many earthquakes did you? Were you in L.A. during the 89 by any chance?
Oh, yeah.
You were there? Wow.
Yeah. I was there in 89. I was there in, I think it was 94 or 95. Anyway, the one where all the bridges fell, like, you know, all the on ramps and stuff like that.
Well, that was 89, wasn't it, during the World Series?
No. Well, there was, you know, there's, it's California.
More than one?
Earthquakes. There's like one every there's like one every minute in California, for God's sake. You know.
Okay, you got me there.
I remember, so I moved to California when I was 23 years old, and I left Minnesota to go, and you know, I had this little apartment in Hollywood, right down from Griffith Park. It was like, you know, down the street from Griffith Park. Which people don't know who Griffith Park is. Griffith Park is where James Dean and Natalie Wood shot their famous scene where they're like, you know, on the top of the mountain.
Oh.
For that one movie. I think it was not East of Eden, the other one.
Without a Cause?
Yeah, Without a Cause, Rebel Without a Cause. And I remember, like, I was sleeping. I was, like, all I could afford in this, you know, this is how long ago this was. So I think I had, like, a little tiny one-room apartment that had a bathroom and, like, something of a kitchen that we rented for, like, you know, I don't know, $225 for the month or something like that. So this is, like, really long time ago. But, like, sleeping in my bedroom, and then, like, I was only in California for, like, I think 3 weeks. And all of a sudden, in the middle of the night, I hear, like, this bang and this rattling. And I, like, wake up. I'm jolted out of sleep by this sound and, like, just chaos. And my first, I heard the windows rattling and the door rattling, and I thought, oh my God, somebody's trying to break in our house, right? And jump up and I, like, run to the door to open up the door. Like, and I don't know what I was thinking I would do. Like, when I opened up the door and these people who were trying to break in were standing there, but I was like, you know, I was half asleep. And then my partner at the time goes, they're not breaking in. We're having an earthquake. And he goes, you can't run outside in an earthquake. Like, things fall, like, it grabs me and pulls me back in. And so it was like my first, like, I think I was only there for like a month. And I remember just thinking, like, my first thought was, like, this is for the birds. I'm going back to Minnesota. You have a lot of time to, like, track a tornado. Like, you don't get surprised like this by anything. And that was, like, my first. So, but, yeah, but I stayed. I stayed for 20 years. And I lived through a lot of earthquakes. And a lot of them were really, like, terrifying. Wow. The last big one I was in was that big, huge one that, like centered right outside of Northridge. And it, like, you know, bridges. I lived really, like, literally minutes from the 10 freeway, and, like, the on-ramps, like, you know, buckled. Our freeway system was, like, all messed up. And, like, my bed was, like, going like this.
Wow.
I felt like Linda Blair, like, without the pea soup.
Right. I was gonna say Dorothy from The Wizard of Oz, but I like the
Linda Blair. That too. Yeah.
The Linda
Blair.
So the safest place to stay if you experiencing an earthquake, where is that? I mean, is
in Minnesota.
I would have thought it was outside. Like, I was with you, Dr. Stately. No, I would not want to be in a building.
The reason they tell you, like, not to run outside is because things can be falling. So, like, you know, I was just reading this thing about the Buffalo, New York. Buffalo is getting hammered this year.
Yes, they really are.
You know, like, 19,000 feet of snow, and, like,
Super Bowl.
No Super Bowl. That's another tragedy, right? And but also, like, they're just being hammered. And here's the thing: is, like, you know, when you in a, like, this was like the reason why, like, it didn't dawn on me, like, okay, you don't run outside, like, when you live in a big, huge metropolitan area where there's a bunch of buildings with stuff that are way above you and high above you that have glass and all these other things that could fall on you, right? It's like, you know, you don't run outside. You're supposed to stay inside. It was funny because, like, when that happened, like, my first instinct was to run into the bathroom and lay down in the bathtub. But I was like, well, that's stupid because, like, that's what you do for a tornado. And so it was like, somebody had to teach me very quickly and, like, you know, disaster management. We'll do step in the door and you find, like, the most, you know, where your strongest places in your house, and you stand underneath that doorway so things fall to either side of you. Then you hope that this guy doesn't show up on a bike.
Right. And your little dog, too.
That was my Wicked Witch impersonation, mm-hmm. Wendy.
Hurricanes with the storm surge, you get on the roof.
if you
left the house and gone to higher ground before, you get
I don't think I've been through a hurricane, but I was with my sister the summer I turned 16 in 1979, and went down and stayed with her and her husband, and we had a tropical storm. And holy cow, I was driving across the causeway from St. Petersburg, or Tampa to St. Petersburg, and literally I was with my brother-in-law, and we were on that little causeway. And I was in his little Ford Mustang, like, not the nicer one, the Ford Mustang 2s, which had multiple issues. At least it wasn't a Pinto. And the waves were coming over the causeway and splashing onto the car and, like, coming up into the vents to get my feet wet. And I was like,
whoa.
And I was like, okay, what I'm learning from these experiences, I need to keep my little A right here in Minnesota. Not go anywhere.
Well, Wendy, you've done some hurricanes in New York.
I have. In 1985, I was in on Long Island, and we had Hurricane Gloria.
Gloria.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that disco song. Too. But, yeah, we all had to evacuate and ride out the storm. It was, we stayed at my mom's house, but it was okay. A lot of trees down, power lines, you know, things like that. Incredible waves at the beach. Exactly. I've never seen anything like
it. These are the reasons you don't go outside when there's any type of, say, big, huge storm system. And it's true out here. Like, I would think about the crazy stuff I did when I was a kid, run to the garage and stand on top of the garage looking for the tornado to come, you know, or running outside to survey all of the damage after it's gone by. Like, you could get electrocuted. You could have, like, just all these crazy things. Like, you know, I really baffle when I think about, like, how
Wendy and I have some boat stories that we were trying to out drive storms and weren't able to do it. Our boat wasn't fast enough a couple times on the Mississippi and the St. Croix.
We got drenched. We have pictures to prove it, too.
Yeah, I look like a wet rat. But, hey, Dr. Stately, really appreciate you coming on. It's Monday, so Wendy and I are still kind of, like, trying to get it together here. And
trying to figure out what you're doing, huh?
Yeah.
Was very lost without you, actually. I should tell you that.
She knows that. Don't you, Wendy?
Yes. Well, no. I was lost without you.
Okay, her fingers were crossed. But, hey, if you're listening to this show, you are part of the resistance. From Chief Planet Coops, the ground on which we stand on is sacred ground. It is the blood of our ancestors. We need to resist, divest, join a group, run for office. We're still here. We are the seventh generation.
Free Leonard Peltier.
Now.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
The devil's advocates.
But do you think the Biden administration's called up Laura Ingraham and making the announcement to the world that we're invading Russia with amphibious troops? Come on, Trump. I mean, and I want to hear fine Trumpsters that want to defend that crap. You know, he's a little late for the early bird buffet. Maybe you people were just naive marks who believed he was a super genius. Then I got some land I'd like to sell you outside of Fukushima.
Check out the entire podcast library at darnwi.com.
Veterans, whatever you're going through, don't wait. Reach out. Find resources at va.gov/reach. That's va.gov/reach. Brought to you by the United States Department of Veterans Affairs. And
you are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.